It is a transcendent Tuesday morning, about 27 and a half past the hour now. That hour being 9 a.m. here in the central time zone of Central Texas. Joining us now from Garden Valley, Texas, is Don Clark. Dr. Don Clark, a biochemist, a member of the Board of Creation Moments, a good friend of the station, a vintner par excellence.
There you go.
David, was that French? How's my French today? Par excellence.
Yeah, okay. Par excellence. Yeah, absolutely.
Make some wonderful wines out there at Valle della Pace. And he joins us every Tuesday morning. We talk about things scientific often. So it's evolution. It's Genesis. And yes, there's science in Genesis. I mean, at least there's facts in Genesis. There's history in Genesis. And it pertains because science is making history. And today we're talking that the discussion is about CO2. Now, Don, they say you can get too much of a good thing. I think that's what they say. Have we gotten too much of a good thing, this CO2? What is it? Why is it? And what do we do with it?
Well, okay, CO2, carbon dioxide.
Mm.
Yes, so it's part of our respiration, you know. Of course, we breathe in oxygen and we exhale CO2. Any animal that's on the face of the earth does the same thing. So we're generating CO2 as we breathe. So we take in the oxygen, and we take in the glucose, and we use the glucose for energy for ourselves, and in the process that generates carbon dioxide. So it's a vital part of life, if you will. Not very much of it in the atmosphere. I think it's 0.04% generally. And
so it's not like toxic waste. I mean, it occurs naturally. And so is it unhealthy?
It is not. It's not a pollutant in that sense. Mm. No, it's completely harmless, unless, of course, you stick your head in a fermenting vat, and then you can pass out because you don't have any more oxygen.
Mm-hmm.
but it's not toxic. And in fact, plants need it in order to grow, because they take the CO2 and they fix it into glucose, and they grow via the CO2, and of course the light hitting the leaves and everything in the process called photosynthesis. So it's absolutely essential for life. It is not, it's not a compound or a product of pollution. It basically is a natural product that is absolutely required for the cycle of life, both in animals, of course, in us, as well as plants. And the interesting thing is that the more CO2 that you have in the atmosphere, the better the plants grow. They love added CO2. Rainforest that has added CO2 via man's activities or other activities winds up growing, the trees wind up growing faster than somewhere else where there isn't quite as much CO2.
You've just defined symbiosis, haven't you? I mean, humans what differentiates us from plants? We're all carbon based, but we're humans. We're living creatures, but we exhale what plants need. Plants produce from that what we need. I mean, that's a wonderful picture.
Right, and that's the way God designed it. And interestingly enough, the oceans can both absorb CO2 when there's too much and expel CO2 when there's not enough. So there's a rhythm there, if you will, in the oceans that help moderate the concentration of CO2 in the atmosphere. Wonderful design that God put together. And, you know, of course, some folks have gotten all bent out of shape because, oh my goodness, CO2 is a greenhouse gas. We've heard that term quite a bit. But so is water. As a matter of fact, water vapor is a much better greenhouse gas than CO2 is.
Hmm.
But we're not saying, well, let's stop the clouds from forming. Let's do something to prevent evaporation of water into the atmosphere. But for some reason, we're picking on CO2 because CO2 is not only produced, of course, when we exhale and the cows and other animals exhale and belching and all that other stuff, but it's also produced when we burn fossil fuel. So every time you get into your car and you turn it on and you burn the gasoline, you're producing CO2 and water. Because you're taking in oxygen from the atmosphere in order to burn the hydrocarbons in the gasoline, and that process then, if you get complete combustion, then what you wind up with is basically carbon dioxide and water.
That's the same chemical process then that happens in our bodies. It just happens faster.
It is a chemical process. Mm-hmm. It's as opposed to a biological system process in our bodies. So our bodies are breaking down, for example, not necessarily, I mean, they're not hydrocarbons so much, but glucose and sugars. And from the glucose, we get our energy in our mitochondria, which is the organelles in our cells that actually utilize the oxygen and utilize glucose, and through a process called the Krebs cycle, produces CO2, and we get ATP, adenosine triphosphate. That's the energy molecule in our cells that helps catalyze, I mean, that basically runs everything else, you know, in our bodies. It helps us make proteins and various things, move things in and out of our cells, and it keeps us warm and all of this other stuff. So we absolutely need to, we do generate that, but automobiles and diesel engines, for example, they take the hydrocarbon, and the reason why it's called hydrocarbon is because it's composed of hydrogen and carbon only, whereas glucose, for example, has hydrogen, carbon, and oxygen as a part of its structure. Hmm. So, in essence, glucose is partially oxidized molecule, whereas a hydrocarbon is completely unoxidized for the most part, and so you get more energy from a hydrocarbon than you would from burning glucose, for example, burning sugar. You get more energy out of it.
Now, by the way, this is we're kind of basing the discussion this morning on an article over at techstartups.com, and I put a link to the article in the chat window at brokenroadradio.com if you kind of want to read along. I'm intrigued by everything we find in the atmosphere, because it's more than it's more than hydrogen and oxygen and CO2. What's the other stuff, and must serve a purpose? I don't imagine God has designed anything that simply wastes stuff. It must all be there for a reason.
Yes, well, I mean, of course, the atmosphere contains 78% nitrogen. So most of the atmosphere is nitrogen, and then we have about 20-21% oxygen, about 0.9% argon, 0.04% carbon dioxide, and then a small amount of other gases.
That's a little tiny bit of carbon dioxide, 0.04%. I mean, that's not a whole lot, percentage-wise.
No, and it's not a whole lot because the plants use it. I mean, if the plants weren't using it, we'd have a lot more. It would build up over time. Now, you know, of course, a lot of folks get to have gotten all upset because, oh, gee whiz, CO2 is a greenhouse gas, so it's causing climate change, and we need to do something about the CO2 in the atmosphere. Well, if you produce just pure CO2, that is, our automobiles that we most of us drive here in the United States have a working catalytic converter. So when you burn, for example, hydrocarbons, you burn gasoline in your automobile, then what isn't completely oxidized, that is, what doesn't completely go into CO2, you might have carbon monoxide, you might have, some nitrites and other types of, because obviously nitrogen's going into the system as well. Your catalytic converter can completely oxidizes whatever is coming out of your exhaust. with, you know, what's coming out of your engine that completely oxidizes it. So you do wind up with CO2 in water as the primary ingredients of the internal combustion engine. And the problem, of course, comes in, which is actually a pollutant, is when you don't get complete oxidation. And, you know, you see the white smoke or the smoke coming out of exhausts of automobiles or diesel engines, for example. Diesel engines typically run dirtier than gasoline-powered engines. and you get more exhaust, but you get what's incomplete combustion, and you get carbon particles put into the atmosphere.
Now, this reference, this article references black soot. Is that what that is?
Black soot is primarily carbon particles and water mixed together, so it's suspended, you know, it's suspended in the atmosphere. Now, black soot is harmful to us. It's harmful to life, and it causes respiratory problems and other things. So that we don't want to breathe that, and it also contributes to climate change. Now, black soot, being a particle, doesn't remain in the atmosphere like CO2 does because it's a gas. Over periods of days, it winds up settling out. But it can cause, if it settles out, let's say, over the glaciers, for example, you get this black coating over the glaciers. Well, you know, anything painted black, for example, with carbon black, essentially is what you're doing, absorbs the heat more, and it starts melting. It starts melting the snow. It starts melting the ice because the carbon that has settled on the glaciers and everything begin to absorb. You know, it absorbs the heat. And voila, you've got melting glaciers and stuff like that because of the amount of carbon black put into the air. Now, I just want to reinforce that this is completely different than carbon dioxide that, you know, is produced in the same type of thing. But, it's more of a problem, not for the United States so much, because we have the catalytic converters on our engines. We did that way back, I guess it was in the 60s or so, maybe the 70s when we started putting catalytic converters on engines. I know maybe later, but so that's taken care of a lot of these type of pollutants. But in developing nations and in Asia, especially China, they don't have those systems. And so, when you see a city that is full of smog, you've got that, the black, basically black carbon in the atmosphere due to incomplete burning, not only in gasoline and diesel engines, but, developing nations use a lot of wood for their heating source. And so they cook with wood, and incomplete burning of wood, of course, will produce the black carbon.
Which is worse, carbon dioxide or black soot?
Black soot, black carbon is by far worse from a health point of view. Mm-hmm. The other thing it does is, of course, if it's in the atmosphere, it blocks the sun. So blocking the sun, that will cause the Earth to cool down because of the particles blocking the light. And, of course, they absorb the light up in the atmosphere while it warms up the atmosphere. And if it gets into the clouds, it'll actually disperse the clouds, so you won't have, you won't have rain, much rain.
Just to demonstrate that I'm not dozing off here, catalytic converters were first used in 1975.
Oh, there you go. So I hit it.
Insisted by the EPA, which was developed by Richard Nixon.
Okay, I'm done now. All right, thank you. Thank you for that, David.
Yes. You're welcome.
Yes, thank you for nailing the timeline down. Mm-hmm. So we've had catalytic converters, obviously, for a long period of time now, but other nations aren't requiring it. And so, you know, they're producing more of this black soot, this carbon black into the atmosphere than we are. I mean, a lot more. And that, you know, that's more detrimental to the environment, as I said, not only for climate change purposes, because if you are breaking up your clouds, well, you're not going to have rain. And of course, then you're going to be producing deserts. And the other effect, of course, you've got potential for cooling down that region that has a lot of this in the atmosphere. And so you might have, cooler temperatures than you normally would.
Is it fair to say that the root problem is too many people? I mean, we're buying the machines, we're burning the fuels, we're doing all that stuff from day to day. If there were just fewer people, we'd be better off.
Well, that's what that's what some people think. And that's, of course, what the globalists are thinking, that we need to, eliminate a certain number of people in order so that we can have the perfect environment around the Earth. The problem with all of this is, if you actually ask the scientists, how much of the CO2 in the atmosphere is being produced by man's activity, and how much is naturally produced? Volcanoes belch out CO2, for example. They belch out other things, but they also belch out a whole lot of carbon dioxide into the atmosphere. So the answer is we don't know. We don't know how much is the result of human activity and how much is a result of natural activity. So they really don't know. So if you don't know the answer to that, you know, why are we getting all upset and, putting all this money and energy and hype into, saying, oh, my gosh, we've got to stop burning fossil fuels, if we don't even know the basic answer, to the question, is man's activities really contributing that significantly?
In other words, we could shut off man-made CO2 entirely, and it may not affect the equation at all.
That's correct. And if you look at global temperatures, over the past 20, 30, 40 years, where there appears to have been an increase in carbon dioxide, what you find is that the global temperature has not risen, maybe by a degree at most, but it's so the temperatures aren't rising. So where is this big problem, that we're having? And, no, contrary to AOC, for example, who says now, okay, the Earth is, we're going to have this catastrophic event in 10 years. 2 years ago, she said that. It was 12 years, so now it's 2 years past. So now we're at 10 years. We only have 10 years left. It's a bunch of hogwash. That's our God designed our environment to be quite flexible and forgiving, if you will. And even the pollutants that we can certainly stress the system and the natural processes that are there. And the natural processes are many. Like I said, even with excess CO2, the ocean sucks it up and puts more via corals and other things that it starts depositing the extra CO2. Bacteria and other things take care of other types of pollutants if we give them time, to work.
Is it fair to say the Earth has its own natural processes that maintain equilibrium or balance? Is that accurate?
Yes, it's completely accurate. And, man's activities increase and, more. Now, in, like I said, in areas where automobiles are don't have the catalytic converters, and they don't have the strict requirements that we do here in the United States, they are producing pollutants. But it's the CO2 is not the issue. It's the black carbon and, you know, the sulfates and the salt, you know, the acid rain and various things like that that is being produced through these dirty engines that are much more of a problem, much more of a health concern than the CO2 being produced. So when anybody, you know, tells you that CO2 is a problem, I really want to see the scientific data that demonstrates that, and it's not available.
Now, you hear a term frequently, carbon footprint. And I presume that means somehow a measurement of the CO2 that you are creating with your burning of fossil fuels and so forth. But what you're telling me is that we can't measure that. We don't know what a carbon footprint is. We can't determine why one country would have a different carbon footprint than the next.
Well, I mean, you can, you can, for example, say, okay, we know how much CO2, for example, is produced from an automobile engine of a certain size. And so if you have one automobile, you know how much that produces. So if you have millions and, you know, 100 million automobiles, then you know the cumulative amount of CO2 that would be produced if that engine is running all the time. Well, of course, the engine is not running.
That's a hypothetical right there.
Yeah. So you can do some calculations, rough calculations, as to how much CO2 is being produced. But like I said, it's not the CO2 that's the problem. It's the black, the black carbon in the soot that is being produced through the dirty engines. And so the answer is not to do away with the engine or not to do away with the system. The answer is to, okay, well, let's get some catalytic converters over, you know, in South America, Central America, and over in Asia, and let's clean up the atmosphere that way. And let's, you know, put a little bit more restrictions on, you know, these type of things, these engines. And, you know, let's all have clean air, because, you know, it's better for humans than to have all these other things.
So now I'm thinking the Paris Climate Accord. I'm not sure how that functions, but it seems to be more about the transfer of wealth from one nation to another. Should we be buying catalytic converters for China? Why don't they do it themselves? Doesn't it make sense for them to do it on their own?
Well, of course it makes sense for their own people to do it, you know, for the care of their own people to do it. And they're sophisticated enough now that they should be doing it. I mean, Japan does it, so why can't, you know, China do it? Well, and the answer to that is because it costs more. And the answer is the government really doesn't care about its people, so, you know, that's not the issue. So you join China's joined the Paris Peace Accords, but they don't have to do anything for a long time. You know, there's no restrictions on them. But for us, we've got all kinds of restrictions, and we're already producing clean air. We've already cleaned up our air, so it's and then they're going to tax us more for having clean air and all of the extra expense of having, you know, these catalytic converters and everything, but yet leave China alone. This is why, you know, Trump, for example, got out of this system. It was not fair to us as a country or anybody else that in a developed nation that, you know, has great restrictions and taxation on the production of CO2 when countries like China, who is not a developing nation anymore, has no requirements whatsoever.
So that's the rationale for letting China off the hook, that they're still a developing nation?
I don't know what the rationale was. Maybe they lobbied heavier than the U.S. did. Mm-hmm. Whatever the rationale was, and, you know, you got to be part of the talks in order to figure out why that would even happen. it's totally unfair to the rest of the world that China isn't included in any type of sanctions or taxation. If anything, they should be taxed more because it should be based on the amount of pollution you're generating and not on the amount of clean CO2 that you're producing.
Well, that's kind of impractical because if you're going to tax the people that are producing more, they don't have any money. It's only us people that have cleaned up our air. We've got the money.
Well, China has the money.
And China's got a lot of money. Yeah.
So you know, I'm picking on China because they're the worst.
They're worst defender.
This all boils down to politics and economics are the real issues, not science.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. It's not a scientific issue. It's a political issue, and somehow China has squeaked by probably greasing some palms there in the negotiations, so they just paid their money, to the right people.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm anxious to see, since we're back in those Paris Climate Accords, if anybody makes sense of this. It seems to me a presentation to the whole country, like the one you just did to our audience, is needed so that people understand what we're talking about here. They keep saying follow the science, but then they throw the science out the window. So it's a mystery to me. We're talking with Don Clark, biochemist, member of the board at Creation Moments. I do want to mention their website, creationmoments.com. And there you will find resources, libraries full of DVDs and articles and blogs and things that have to do with a scientific explanation, scientific support for the biblical story of creation. And it's well worth the visit, creationmoments.com. Don Clark, thank you so much. I think we've learned something today, and I look forward to talking with you next week. Are you going to be available? I hope.
Yes, I will be available indeed. Yes.
We'll see you then. In the meantime, have a great week, okay? Thank you, Don.
Okay, thank you. All righty. So long, folks.